Well, hello. Greetings to everyone joining us today. I'm Eric Cardwell, NASP president and proud principal of the Besser Elementary School in Alpena, Michigan, a pre-K through five building. And for those of you that have joined us for our active conversation today, I just want to say on behalf of everyone at the NASP office, as well as members across the nation, welcome. The mission of NASP is to lead in advocacy and support for elementary and middle level principals and other education leaders in their commitment for all children. If you're not a member, we extend a cordial invitation to join us in advancing our profession and helping students. We have a membership category that's actually specifically for assistant principals, so check out membership information at NASP.org. Today's webinar is being recorded and will be available in the near future on the NASP website. Feel free to go back and revisit thoughts or possibly share this informational resource with a friend or colleague. We're stronger when we spread the word. NASP continues to recognize the significant role APs play in the overall academic achievement of students nationwide. And we appreciate you and the powerful impact you have on the success of schools around our country. Today's webinar will focus on the timely topics facing assistant principals across our nation. And we sincerely appreciate our panelists who are here today sharing. They represent the distinguished group of NASP Assistant Principals of the Year. Among the myriad of administrator responsibilities is that of instructional leadership. So we'll start off with our first presenter to help us understand and appreciate instructional leadership. Here to help us better understand that critical practice of instructional leaders is Shelly Archuleta Smith, AP of Andrew Jackson Elementary in Old Hickory, Tennessee. Shelly.
I just want to say that I'll be talking today about being an instructional leader at my school. And the first thing that I think is very important is taking the time to build relationships with all of your staff members. I don't know if you wanted to, there we go. I think this is very important because when you have to ask them to do something that may be difficult or have a difficult conversation with them, it goes a lot smoother when you have built that relationship. Another thing is, you know, taking the time to listen to them. A lot of times they just want to be heard. I also have found that following through with what you say you're going to do means a lot to the teachers. And to build a positive climate and culture, taking the time to thank them, you know, putting a note in their box, writing words of encouragement, and putting out a post-it note, leaving it in their classroom, that really means a lot to the teachers when you do that. The next area that I find important is building teacher capacity. And I take the time to provide opportunities for teachers to share their knowledge. When I see a strength that they have in an observation or a walkthrough, I suggest that they present that to the faculty, or I even have other teachers come to observe them. I stay current on the best practices and initiatives. I feel that if I'm current on that I am better able to support the teachers. I continue to be a lifelong learner. I attend PDs to find out the best practices that I can share with teachers. And a lot of times I learn so much when I go in for observations. I learn a lot from the teachers, and I love to share that information with other people and use them as a resource. One of the things that I feel is very important is providing meaningful feedback. Giving that feedback to the teachers, giving them that feedback, and then something to take back that they can implement right away. I have taken the time to research strategies that can be implemented for their refinement and make it applicable to their content area. So if it's PE, music, art, finding something that they will be able to take and use right away in their classroom. I enjoy having conversations with them about what they already do in their classroom and how we can implement the new strategy into their lessons. We have had conversations with the teachers to set goals. This year, we're going to continue looking at their refinement and sticking with that refinement all year long and provide PD for them, getting them coach support, you know, to help them become successful. And we found that focusing on one area was better than giving them several different areas to work on throughout the year. And I also get feedback from the teachers on how I'm doing as an administrator and make improvements from there. And the last thing that I have put is supportive. I work with teachers to help them grow as educators. I listen to them, again, just because sometimes they just need to be heard. And they need to know that you are right there with them, and I don't ever ask them to do anything that I wouldn't do myself. And I hope that this is helpful, and my contact information is there. And if you have further questions, you can contact me.
Thank you. Thank you, Honor. One of the takeaways, and it was nice to hear Shelley bring it up, was the importance of relationships with staff. And her last thing is that she would not ask them to do something that she herself is not willing to do. So, Shelley, kudos to you. Thank you for the insight and the helpful information. Another significant role facing assistant principals is dealing with behaviors of students and staff. And this is one item I can say that having served on the board now for this is the beginning of my sixth year, is the fact that social-emotional learning is so huge across our nation, and sometimes people feel that it's isolated to just maybe their community, and it's not. So Jessica Melendez Carrillo, the assistant principal at Bill Childress Elementary School in Benton, Texas, will now guide our discussion. Welcome, Jessica. As Shelley noted, relationship building is essential for a school's success. Our faculty, our staff, our students, and all the stakeholder groups know when school leadership is cohesive or, sadly, when it's divided. And helping us gain a clearer understanding of how to bring stakeholders on board to help students, which is what it's all about, is Jared Roberts from A.D. Oliver Middle School in Brockport, New York. So, Jared, welcome.
Thank you, Eric. Can everybody hear me okay? Because I think I was muted, but I think I'm here now.
Yep.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you for the introduction. And the topic that I wanted to talk briefly with all of you about is certainly about bringing stakeholders on board. And I'm going to have to give Shelley some credit here in her first opening remarks, because a lot of what Shelley said in speaking about being an instructional leader certainly translates probably to a majority of the topics that we're discussing today. But when talking specifically about bringing stakeholders on board, those relationships are critical to be able to get buy-in and support from all of the different members of organizations. So certainly as the role of an assistant principal, you're dealing with students, you're dealing with families, you're dealing with staff, you're dealing with other administrators, a multitude of different organizations, people in the organization. And the first thing that you need to think about is that, you know, those relationships are so critical. And certainly starting off, you know, if you're starting as a new assistant principal or a new administrator, or you've moved to a new school culture or system, you do have to really spend some time doing some research and some investigation. And certainly doing a lot of active listening. So listening and, you know, trying to find out what some of the concerns are, what's going very well, and what are some of the areas that you want to problem solve together with your groups. So I can share a quick example. When I came on board, this is starting in my fifth year as an assistant principal.
Okay.
I'm in a middle school, grade 6 through 8, and we were starting an initiative around the positive behavior interventions and supports here in the building and in the district. And I inherited this committee that had already been formed. And you know, really what I needed to do was just sort of listen and learn. What are some things that they were doing very well with, and where are some areas that they needed some support? And I think the key there was to build that trust and build that relationship with that particular committee, and then making sure that we have input from all different stakeholders, because truly what happens, people are very supportive and very invested in things or movements or strategies that they help create. I think if you take anything away from my brief talk today, that people are going to be invested when they're involved. So, starting for my fifth year here, four years later, the group, when we meet over the summer, this past summer, we really spent time developing our new systems and strategies, and it was all coming from my stakeholders. So, I have a number of different staff members that are involved in that. We gather student input in various different ways. We have a student club that supports our movement. We have parents and community and our PTSA that are involved. It really becomes more of a, I'm a guide, I'm inspiring, I'm following up on things that they need me to follow up on, that's in my role of the administrator, but truly it's coming from them and it's becoming a part of what they're creating, and they're so much more vested in the outcome. Truly, building those relationships, inspiring those trust, making sure that you're always thinking to problem solve together, seeking feedback and listening to feedback. And you're not going to be able to solve everything, but certainly making sure that people feel heard and people feel valued is what's really truly going to assist any work that you're moving forward. So, like I said before, I guess I would close by just saying that remember that we're always invested in things that we help create. So when you're thinking about pulling groups together, when you're thinking about how can I get more members and more stakeholders to participate, make sure that you're sharing that message that you are going to be a part of something, and then they're very, very proud of what kind of comes out of the work. So make sure that you just think that, people are going to want to be a part of things because they truly care about kids and they care about your school. So. So that being said, I think I'll pass it back to Eric.
Oh, thanks, Jared. And just a couple of takeaways that I think are just absolutely huge, and Jared hit on it first, was just listen. When you first go into a building, it's so important to listen. And in my 18th year as a building principal, that is the one thing that can make or break it, is that the staff has invested time. Analyze, working together, and listen, pick out the pieces that that work, and then you can slowly change over time. But Jared hit right on the nose with ownership. Everybody's vested when they feel that they're involved, and it's not just education; it's everything. So thanks, Jared. Really appreciate that. Well, I think we have sorted out the technological issues, that the barriers that were keeping Jessica from us. So, Jessica, I've already done your introduction. I don't know if you were on the line, but hey, greetings.
Yes, I'm ready. Hi, I'm good. Thank you so much, and I apologize for that. I had some technical difficulties, but I'm ready to go. So I am excited to be here. I wanted to talk about, because I know we have, a short amount of time to share out, I wanted to talk about PBIS. So PBIS is Positive Behavioral Interventions and Support. So I wanted to target this because as a district in Canutillo ISD, we have been able to increase parental involvement and be successful in implementing systematic ways to function as a campus. And that has allowed us to reduce any type of behaviors that, those negative behaviors that makes, kiddos to visit your office often. So I wanted to talk about PDIS and just to, because behavior is a very broad concept. So PDIS is a mindset, and it's just a systematic approach that allows you to carry on your daily duties. So PDIS.org is one of the websites that I really highly recommend to everyone. It was funded by the U.S. Department of Education, and it was just created to support schools, in building those systematic ways to address the social, the emotional, and the behaviors in schools. So I put together a couple of things from that website to talk to you about the Tier 1, the Tier 2, and the Tier 3 components of PBIS. So PDIS, as far as tier one, it just talks about, you know, your school-wide expectations. You know, what do you do as a campus to relay that message and create that positive culture among everyone? You know, parents, students, teachers, admin, just everyone around you, you know, making sure that in your morning announcements, you're giving that positive message so that kiddos, you know, and staff can always, you know, refer back to that throughout the day. Modeling behavior as a campus, you know, parental involvement. I was always, one of the things that I did was whenever we had a PAC meeting, the parent advisory committee or a campus improvement committee or any type of committee that's going on in your campus, I always, you know, came to that meeting just to make sure that we were all on the same page as far as, you know, establishing those positive behaviors. And even though we didn't eliminate all the issues, you know, I was able to see that by creating this system, you know, parents were more on board. So I was able to involve all the stakeholders and just give that message of being safe, being respectful, being responsible, and address that and just talk to them and have that positive conversation with them. So on that same, you know, component on tier one, you know, it goes into your duty schedules, everything that you have to do as an assistant principal, that difficult task, you know, procedures and just making sure that everything works. Everybody being on the same page, but with that positive approach. And then when we talk about tier two, you know, those are the, you know, the students that you spend more time with, you know, in the office or they come in or you have to go into the classrooms and work with them. So what we did as a campus is that in the summer, we looked at data. And that's one of the things that I also wanted to share, you know, having that data available, it's going to guide that systematic way that you want to create to prevent those behaviors, you know. All stakeholders need to be involved in order for change to happen. And so as a campus and as a district, we were able to tie in the PDIS component, you know, the attendance component, just giving that positive, you know, students, you know, we're here, we want to be in school, we want to just create that, you know, high level of instruction, and we can only do it if students are present. So we were able to, you know, have celebrate the successes through PDIS, every single success that we had as a campus on our tier one and every single success in tier two, you know, addressing those case by case scenarios, we were able to make just huge gains, you know, as far as, I can give you an example, like our referrals to the office, just, you know, the times that parents will come in upset or there was some disagreement, you know, it was less and less as we were able to carry on with PDIS. So if I can go to the next slide. So how do we do it? Just very general for PDIS, like I said, that source is listed. The source is listed at the bottom of the screen, PDIS.org. I highly recommend it. It can support your student study teams, your ARDs, any type of meeting. It has a lot of resources that you can definitely just read on, research, it's just available for all of us. And most importantly, what I want to mention is you want to be able to make a change based on your data. You have to involve everyone. The data is what's going to guide that change. And also the staff recognition, you know, to build all these components that are listed here, you know, the school-wide data system, the effective curriculum, the positive approach, the proactive communication, all that is going to transfer into that positive school culture. So I wanted to take this opportunity to share about PDIS because I feel that it's just helped us so much to be where we are right now. I take it back to you, Eric.
Thanks, Jessica. As you know, PDIS is a game changer in a lot of schools. Tremendous. Thank you so much for your information and sharing your insight and wisdom. So often assistant principals are assigned the important role to lead and monitor special education in their classrooms, or in their schools, sorry. But Bill Hesford of Bayfield Elementary in Bayfield, Colorado, can help us gain a clearer understanding on how we can better serve in this area. I'll turn it over to Bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Eric, and hi, everybody. So I thought I would start with just a little context. I am starting my first year as a principal this year in a intermediate school setting, so that's third, fourth, and fifth grade. But for the past 5 years, previous to this, I've been in a K-5 setting and on two campuses. So those two campuses obviously came with their own challenges of going back and forth. But I led most of our special ed work with that population of about 675 students. And we're in rural southwest Colorado, so we're in the mountains. I broke my talk into three main topics, and I'm going to use an acronym that I hope folks are familiar with, MTSS. So my first topic is the assistant principal as MTSS leader, which is in Colorado we have our multi-tiered systems of support, or system of supports, multi-tiered system of supports. And Jessica did a beautiful job talking about PBIS, and in Colorado, the state has taken PBIS and response to intervention and housed them under the MTSS acronym. So that's a more all-encompassing acronym for both those academic and behavioral systems. I'm not really sure if that's spreading outside of Colorado, so I'll leave it there, and if people have questions, then I can go ahead and answer those. But the tiered model that Jessica referenced in her PBIS talk was perfect segue for me, because the assistant principal as the leader of those systems is a critical role in any school. And so we're using those systems to identify students in need, pair those students with intervention, and in a small number of cases, then possibly identify kids with learning disabilities or special education needs and pairing them with service providers. So I was the leader of that process in our setting. And so I think one of the most important things as a starting assistant principal when I was starting was becoming familiar with special education law. And both Shelley and Jared referenced how important it is to do your research. And that was a steep learning curve for me. I came to the AP role after 7 years as a third grade teacher and had no special knowledge of special ed law, so I had to really dig into that. And I had a great superintendent at the time who was pointed me in the right direction, but also who I could bounce ideas off of when it was necessary. And also our other three speakers so far have just really laid the groundwork for me in the sense that building relationships has come up in each of the three topics. And I think that's really what it comes down to. And I'm just so glad to hear everybody focusing on it. And as the leader of those systems, as an assistant principal, having the solid relationships with teachers, your school psychologists, your social workers, your network of providers outside of the school, is just so critical, because we can't serve every need inside the school building, and the more we can pair families with outside resources and help make sure that we can fund those resources, the more they're going to trust us, the better relationships we're going to have with those families, and the more they want to follow our lead. So that's kind of wraps up my MTSS leader piece, and the next part is assistant principal as special education servant leader. So this piece to me is really about that relationship with the special education teachers themselves. In our building, currently I have two special education teachers. In my former setting, I had four. We were housing an effective ed program and a high needs program. And we had a challenge in front of us to create an inclusive environment in our school. As a rural district, there had been a history here of having higher needs students travel down the road to a district with more resources. And when I took over as assistant principal, we made a commitment to developing those programs within our building. And so there was a mindset shift that needed to happen in our building around, you know, including all students. And people were not resistant. They just needed help making those changes. And so we've been very intentional in setting up our special education staff as building level leaders. You know, ultimately I oversee our MTSS process, but my special ed teachers are critical members of that team. And so what has happened is our staff look to those folks when they are in need of advice or when they are in need of pairing a student with an intervention. And so we've just been intentional about setting up our special ed teachers as experts and as leaders, and that has, and we celebrate their successes and we do all sorts of things to put them in that role. And so that's how I see myself as a servant leader to those teachers, because we've gone ahead and been, as I said, very intentional about trying to pair them with the right staff and to help shift that mindset around, you know, these are the kids from our community and we will serve them. And I think we're doing an excellent job. But that took some doing. And my third topic for the assistant principal related to special education is the assistant principal as a building instructional leader. And so we absolutely heard Shelley talk about this. I think that as an assistant principal, you usually have some influence in how you can set up teaching models in your school. And one of the things that we've been pushing hard is a co-teaching model. And it is a stressor to have a special ed teacher and a general ed teacher able to be available for the same hour every day to co-teach lessons. But it is doable with some creative scheduling. And when we can't make those co-teaching models happen on a regular basis, we try real very hard to make sure that we have dedicated co-planning time so that, you know, the special ed teacher has time to be with each of the students, teachers that they need to be with in order to make sure that lessons are properly set up with entry points for all levels specific to certain students. And so, you know, scheduling time for teachers not only to teach together but also to plan together is another way that assistant principals can support their special education programming, their special education teachers, and just the culture around inclusiveness in schools. So it doesn't look like I've taken too much time. So I will just put in a plug, since this is an NAESP platform for the assistant principal as advocate, and I believe very strongly in membership, and I'm an active member in the Colorado Association of School Executives and attend their events regularly. And I, as someone who works in a rural setting and doesn't have a big network of principals and assistant principals nearby that I can get together with face to face, I really count on our state association for those relationships. And I regularly attend the two big conferences that they put on here in Colorado, and I'm anxious to get to some more NAESP events. But I think I've seen firsthand in Colorado the ability of assistant principals and principals to affect change at the state level. We've been active trying to we have gotten a constitutional amendment on the ballot in Colorado to hopefully update our outdated funding formula. And really, that's the biggest obstacle in Colorado around providing the kind of support for special education that we need to be able to provide. So with that, my plug for membership and advocacy, I will turn it back over to Eric.
Well, thanks, Bill. You know, a couple of takeaways that I thought was really powerful was when Bill brought up the special ed teachers are building level leaders and the whole co-teaching model. Pretty powerful items. And the last note that Bill had as far as being advocates for the profession, for your teachers, for kids, taking that leadership role within the states as well as national is critical, because do we want to set our own message or do we want others to define us with their message? And that's where you as the professionals in the field have an opportunity to really steer the discussion both at the micro level, at the level of your community, but then state and national as well. Thanks for plugging your state association, the power of state associations, and the national, Bill. Well, in leadership at any level, effective communication, as we know, is essential to accomplish goals and meet student needs. And sharing with us on this topic today is Ikeda Jones from Highlands Elementary in Wilmington, Delaware. Welcome, Ikeda.
Hello, how is everybody? I hope you're all doing well in these first few weeks of school. Like I was just introduced by Mr. Eric, I am Ikeda Jones and I work at the lovely Highlands Elementary School. So, as you can probably tell, I'm a very bubbly personality, and the communication is key for me. But one thing that I wanted to start off with was thinking about, as a new assistant principal, anytime you have change, you're always going to have your staff go through that grief process. So they're going to have the denial, like, oh, my goodness. They're going to have the anger. They're going to be faced with depression. Then they're going to bargain with you. And then finally, they'll get to that point where they're like, okay, we can accept it. So as you're going in, don't give up. Just keep persevering and knowing that as long as you are open and honest, your staff, your parents, and all of your stakeholders, as Jared alluded to earlier, will be there for you. With that said, the biggest thing is early positive connections. Take the time to make the phone calls. Coming into a building, anytime we have our heavy hitters, just like Jessica was speaking about PBIS, the first thing that I do as an assistant principal is my kiddos that had a hard time at the end of the school year, I reach out to those parents and say, hey, we love you. We're so excited that little Josie's coming back. What can we do to help you to have a successful year? When a parent hears that, they kind of get caught off guard and they don't expect it. And then they can't help but say, well, I need help with this. I need help with that. And you don't take no for an answer. So just saying, you know, I love your child too much to see them fail. And the only way that they can be successful is if we do this together. Working together, having those relationships is so, so important. Shelly spoke about relationships a little bit earlier. I feel like my co-panelists have kind of delivered my section for me, which is good. However, we do want to make sure that we take the time to not only communicate with those that are on our peer level, but also those district level or central level office individuals who are there to support us. If you have an area of weakness, don't be afraid to reach out and say, hey, I need support. Nothing like hiding something that you're weak in, and then they find out through your evaluation process. So being open, honest, and being able to be vulnerable in situations that may not always seem like the best, but it's better to know and not than not to know. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Also, celebrating your successes. The smallest, most minute thing could be the biggest thing to change the culture and the climate of your building. So communicating the little things. Oh, so-and-so had a baby. Oh, this one didn't break a pencil today. Oh, so just the parent didn't come late to pick up their child. Constantly, constantly getting that positivity out and just being that bubbly support. I'm not saying be like me because I am over the top. However, when you are open and honest, everyone has a level of trust, and trust is very important. If you make a mistake, you say, my bad. You fix it, and you don't repeat it. One thing that I think is very important with the staff is talking about having core values. At the beginning of the school year, develop core values for your building, and once you hone in on those core values, you will notice that anytime you get a group of adults together, one of the biggest things is communication. So establishing what communication will look like in your building from day one is very important. Once you've done that with your staff, you can then extend that to your families, and then you can trickle it down to your students. Once everyone understands what we value most, and I bet you any amount of money, communication is there, you can then create a level of dialogue so that people are comfortable enough, even when they're fearful, to come and speak on what they're very passionate about. It doesn't mean that we're always going to agree, but I really believe that when you judge someone, it kind of impairs them, and it helps your ability to be able to see them and see them clearly for who they are. So just like we don't want people to look at us and say, oh, they're just a leader. Oh, they're just here to tell me what to do. The individuals that we're dealing with, our stakeholders, our teachers, our parents, our paraprofessionals, our custodians, our bus drivers, anyone that makes it, helps us to make it through the day, we have to treat them as one. So one thing that I do want to talk about before I kick this back over is remember that leaders are like extension cords. Our power flows through us, but not always from us. So if we're not willing to be open, honest, and sit back and use that listening ear, we're never going to get where we need to be to effectively communicate. I hope I addressed your needs, because I have a very short time and I can talk a lot. I'm going to hand it back over to you, Eric.
Well, thank you so much, Aquata. That's, we can never learn enough about how you effectively communicate, and I love your enthusiasm that you show for the position. Well, it's not too late. We've had some questions that have been coming in. If you'd like to ask a question, all you have to do is go to the text box and just type it in, and Honor will get that to our panelists. But I just want to say, wow, you guys, what an absolutely great conversation. And, again, I talked with our presenters earlier today, but I just want to thank them for contributing today, because this is what makes our profession stronger, is when we share best practices and we can ask questions and communicate. And, again, it provides a kind of a national perspective, which is always interesting. But again, perhaps during our time together, a question has surfaced or you'd like to ask further clarification about an area. So it's not too late to type it in. And at this time, I guess I am going to go through, and as Honor sends me the questions, I'll be asking those.
Eric, we do have a question from Orit, who asks, what is an area that most first-year APs find challenging? And that's
open to all of our panelists, so I'll just unclick your mute button and have at it, panelists.
This is Bill, and I'll talk about special ed challenges just because that was my topic. I know for me it was a real learning curve to become at least co-facilitator of IEP meetings, and one of the toughest things in a role, I think, as an AP can be a contentious IEP where certain factions of the team are not in agreement. And I think one thing that I learned after several marathon meetings, I shouldn't say several, at least a couple marathon meetings that went on for hours and hours, is that it is okay to say, listen, I don't think we're going to finish this today. Let's schedule another time next week or 2 weeks out when everybody can go away, think over what we've done here, and come back possibly with some more common ground as opposed to just letting meetings drag and drag and drag. And I don't mean to say that that's happened a lots of times here, but it's happened to me a couple of times, and that was a real learning curve for me. I work in close partnership with the school psychologists in our school, and I've definitely learned that making sure I've done some prep work and some relationship work with that person and connecting before the meeting to find out if there's anything contentious that we need to know about, and that we might be getting into a situation like that where it's okay to say, all right, folks, let's come back next week and try to hammer this out instead of just letting things go and go and go with no end in sight. So that was one thing from the special ed realm.
I think for me, this is Equada, I'm sorry. For me, the most difficult was I was a staple in the building that I originally transitioned from. So from transferring from a teacher leader into an assistant principal was a big wow. So your peers are one thing when you are a teacher leader, but transferring over to an assistant principal and leaving a building I was very comfortable with, I found that it was very hard to build trust when trust was so damaged before I came in. So if you may think, okay, I'm going to go in, I'm going to be an instructional leader, I'm going to get this done, and then you're like, oh, no, they're not even ready to say hello. So one challenge is depending on how your district works or how your state works, they may be fluid with movement, And when you walk into that building as a new assistant principal and you don't really know the culture or climate of the building, you kind of have to learn on the fly, and you have to really fight to gain trust with not only parents, but your teachers and all other staff and your students. So I think for me that was difficult.
And if I may add to that, this is Jessica. I just want to say that, you know, one of the biggest things that I struggled with was just being able to manage, you know, the textbooks, you know, making sure that everybody had textbooks, making sure that duty schedules were up and running, you know, making sure that we had a system in place. So I had to figure out a way to just be organized and just say, you know what, today let me work on this. I'm going to move on to the next thing. So it was just be able to assimilate everything that was going on. I was opening up a school with a principal, along with my principal at that time, and I was a new assistant principal. So that's where, you know, PBIS came in place. That just kind of opened up, you know, so many different perspectives in my life, and I was able to figure out what I needed to do first, what I needed to do second. And that goes into a question that I just saw that it says, somebody asked a question from, you know, how do you become that instructional leader? And I think that's difficult when you're dealing with textbooks, discipline, and referrals, and kids, you know, seeing you as the person that's taking over the discipline, but you're also the instructional leader. So I had to really, you know, I made a difference. I had to believe that I made a difference as an instructional leader and embrace it. I think many times we don't give ourselves a lot of credit because we work along the principal, and so we support the principal, but you make a difference. And by building those relationships, by working, you know, just one step at a time, you're able to realize that you make a difference every single day.
Anybody else like to share? Okay, Hunter, do we have another question?
Sure.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jared.
Oh, Jared, go ahead.
I can certainly add on, and then, you know, I'd be happy to answer the other question if that's helpful. But I think time management is going to be the biggest challenge. And I heard a lot of you say trying to balance all the roles and responsibility, and it really truly does come down to, you know, time management. And what I would encourage any new assistant principals to really think about is, you know, when you're putting together your calendar for the week or your calendar for the day, making sure that you do prioritize students on your calendar, being visible for to be around in the school on your calendar, because you can very easily get caught up in, you know, somebody mentioned building the schedules, organizing textbooks, all that logistical stuff that you're supporting the building manager from the management perspective. I've learned to put on my calendar, like, students visible for, like, certain queries during the day, and nothing else is it to be scheduled there, and it's me being out and about if I have to meet with kids, and if I don't, and I'm out and about, I'm in classrooms and things like that. So management certainly is something that I know that was a struggle at first.
Here's a another question has come in from Ann. What specific research or books or whatever learning would you suggest new APs look at or review in order to become better? What have you guys used? What's your favorites?
So this is Jared. I volunteered to answer the next question because I think I cut you off a little bit. But anyway, a couple things I would encourage you to look at, and this is something that you're not going to just look at, you know, you're going to continue to research as you progress through the profession. But I've been doing a lot of research around trauma-informed care, around the ACEs study, the adverse childhood experiences, and how that really impacts your school communities, and not just students and or staff that have known trauma, but truly, you know, there was a lot of mention about PBIS and tier one strategies, but how can you become a more trauma-informed school to support all kids so that we are really being offering a safe and supportive learning environment? I certainly would do a lot of research in that area. Susan Craig is an author that has become very popular with Reaching Teens Who Hurt. Dr. Kenneth Ginsberg would be another one with the text Reaching Teens. That's not the right title. It'll come back to me. But look up Dr. Kenneth Ginsberg, because there's the resources that he has available for us. But just continuing to be on the latest and greatest research, and I truly feel that this is a very huge topic right now in all of education.
So this is Ikwada. A couple of books that I kind of keep on my desk are The 10-Minute in Service by Todd Whitaker, which really helps when you're trying to deliver things to your staff. It's a really quick read. And then when I first began, I really used Paul Benbrick's and Toya a lot. One, to develop my teachers, but also to develop myself. Leveraged Leadership was a really good book, and it helped to build my practical knowledge, but also it will actually help you to build your school into an exceptional school. And he also has a book that is called Driven by Data and Getting Better Faster. And I use those with my new teachers. Then as far as those of you who are interested in instructional leadership, one of the books that I use a lot and keep on my desk is Learning by Doing, which is by the DeFords, if you're familiar with the whole PLC process. And my other big favorite that was donated and I'm supposed to pay it for and not have it yet was Good to Great by Jim Collins. And it just really helps you make a leap even though other people don't. It helps you not to be stagnant. And if you're speaking on trauma-informed choices like Jared had just spoke about, I would say read Help for Billy. And if you could do a book study with your students, with your staff, I'm sorry, this will help with that trauma-informed care. And that's by Heather Forrest. Let you see how often I read them because they're in my brain. But they're very good resources, and they're all research-based. And, oh, by the way, my information is on this slide, as well. So feel free to reach out if you need.
This is Bill. I'll just give one book recommendation called Thanks for the Feedback by Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen. Is probably the thing that I read the most recently. And it's an interesting shift in thinking about there's book on book on book that you can look for and giving feedback, but this one is about how do you be more effective in receiving feedback. And you can use it with staff in the sense that it prompts others to be better at asking questions of you that might help you provide good feedback to those folks. So it was an interesting read. Thanks for the Feedback by Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen. And I guess I said one, but I have one other thing. For me, it's pretty dry, but the Colorado Book of State Statutes is something that I became pretty familiar with pretty quick when I started my role as AP.
All right, that's great. There's another question that's come in about what recommendations would you give for APs who want to expand beyond just discipline or just one area? I mean, what kind of strategies would you suggest they pursue in expanding and getting their job expanded into other areas that you've talked about?
Well, this is Jessica. I wanted to add as far as that question and just that it is important also to remember one of the strategies that I've always remembered, one of the ways that I just try to, you know, grow and just learn more information about, you know, being as a system principal, just that growing component, is to reach out to your service center. In Texas, we have 20 service centers, and in El Paso, it's Region 19. So a lot of the times, if I have a question, if I don't understand something, if I just need more insight, you know, I reach out to them, to the consultants, and they're able to help me and support, you know, whatever it is that's bothering me, you know, that I need just more information, whether it's LPAC, Section 504, anything that's related to that instruction. But also at the state level, I have, you know, I'm part of TEPSA. So I would say a strategy more, you know, more in the broad sense, it's to reach out to those associations, you know, just like NAESP, you know, TEPSA, you know, it's a Texas association, and they have a lot of research out there. I'm able to read the magazines that I, you know, that they create every month, and it's just become something that I just read often. So I think just to network, I think that's one of the things, being able to network, reach out to the community, reach out to your service center, reach out to other administrators, other APs, other principals around your area or outside the state, anywhere, really.
Jessica, to follow up, there was a question that was specifically targeted to you, and that was, how often do you do data analysis in your school for PBIS?
So we do every 6 weeks. So every 6 weeks I run a report and we go over all the data. We identify any key areas that we need to target. If it's a cafeteria, if it's in the bus, if it's, you know, something that's having, we're having a problem at dismissal, you know, any fights or anything like that. So we have specific areas that we want to target. So we do it every 6 weeks. And then in the summer, we have a PBIS committee at each campus. So in my case, for my campus, we get together during the summer. And more commonly, you know, we analyze the data and we just go from there. And then we set up goals for the rest of the year. So that's the time that we really think about what happened. We reflect on the previous year. And then we start the new year by setting those goals, whether we're continuing with those goals or we're just creating new ones, whatever the case it is.
One other question. All of you have received the distinction, the national distinguished of the 2018-19 National Outstanding Assistant Principal of the Year, which I would like to congratulate you for getting that nomination. But be interested in knowing, what do each of you do to support your principal in school in building or changing the school culture so it's more positive? What role have you assigned yourself in that process?
This is Shelley. I think one of the things that my principal and I do is we communicate quite a bit and try to figure out what our vision is and for the teachers to see that we're on the same page in this, and that they don't see that I say something and she says something different, that we really communicate a lot and try to figure out, you know, the best place that we need to be and always put the students at the forefront.
This is Bill. Again, I would agree that making sure that you stay on message with your principal is critical, and that's not always easy. I had a long-term relationship with my principal. We were together 5 years, and it got tougher and tougher over time, honestly, to stay on message altogether. Mostly because she was getting ready to finish up. She had a couple crises in her personal life, and that made it really tough. There was almost a whole school year where she was operating remotely. So staying on message was a real challenge, but it was still critical for her to be perceived as the leader in the building. And so I think as an assistant principal, there's a real effort that has to be made in order to support your principal and their messaging and their instructional programming. And I think there was a question about how do you become the instructional leader. And it can be tough if the principal is hesitant to relinquish those roles. But I think you be honest and you be upfront about, you know, this is a professional goal of mine. Can you help support me? And, even if it's your program, can you help support me and assign me some of these leadership roles in instructional, whether it's observing staff, evaluating staff, walking through together with the principal, whatever that might look like. But I think supporting the principal's message is critical.
This is Equetta. So for me, what I found is, just as my colleagues, supporting the vision and being consistent with it, but also calibrating just to get a pulse of where you are in reference to PLCs and walkthroughs and teacher evaluations. Because what I found is I am very unique in my evaluation style. I'm very unique in my way of expressing myself, and my principal does not want to take that away from me. However, we always make it a point to speak, and we call them our huddles. And every morning we have a morning huddle from 7 to 7:30 before everyone else gets in the building, and we just take a pulse of where she is and where I am. And as Bill referenced, there are times when we may get flustered with each other, but when we walk out of that door, we're one voice. And being open and honest with your communication with your principal, and also asking, you know, if you want to take on other roles, is very important. Because if they don't know and you're feeling some kind of way inside, it's not going to help their relationship at all. And I've been in build situations as also where I had a principal who was kind of out of the building. And since they were out of the building, it kind of caused me to have to take over, but I still had to live in the image of that leader. So being their right-hand person and being there to support them along the way will definitely help with your culture, because teachers are just like kids. If they get one little inkling, they'll pop right through.
Is there anybody else that would like to share? All righty. Well, it's been an absolutely great time today, but this is only the beginning. We'd like to keep these conversations going, supporting APs. Topics such as these today, specifically designed for assistant principals and leaders of all pre-K through 8 levels, will be shared in our quarterly webinar series. So watch your email and visit the NASB website for the latest information. And again, also, if you're out there and you're thinking about being an NASB member, while you're on the website, you can also take a look at that opportunity. And I know that summer is gone, but it's never too soon to start thinking about that summer learning. And the NASB Pre-K Principals Conference will be held in Spokane, Washington, July 10th through the 12th. I'll tell you what, we had an absolutely phenomenal conference in Orlando. We had Sean Covey, Daniel Pink, Jackie Joyner Kersey, and Sal Khan, who were a part, and it was a blockbuster. So I encourage you, it's a great opportunity for you to recharge professionally. Bring your family, because that's one of the nice things about summer conference, is that you can bring your family along. I did that with mine down in Orlando while I was learning. They were out seeing the sights. So Spokane, Washington, July 10th through the 12th, everybody. Also, the call for speakers is now available. I just got the email, I want to say last week, and the registration will open soon. So if you're interested in turning in a proposal to NASB, you can contact our office if you don't already have the email. We'll help you direct you in the right direction to get those proposals in, because even though we had those keynote addressers, the backbone of our NASP conferences are you folks, us, the people that are in the field. So get those proposals in if you'd like to participate.
Eric, the link at the bottom of the page takes them right to the call proposal, so they can just go right there.
We can't make it any easier than that, can we, Ari?
No.
But NASB is your go-to source for principal leadership, and just check out the information on the NASB website. I want to again thank our panelists, thank Honor for coordinating today's webinar, and we wish you out there in the field much success as you move through the upcoming school year. And as always, if anybody at NASB or myself, you had my email, it was up there before, can assist in your leadership journey, please do not hesitate to reach out. We're in this together, and we're stronger together. So have a great afternoon, and I just want to thank everybody for joining us. Take care.